Welcome to Theatre Voice, Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm so glad we've finally caught up and we can have a chat. Actor, writer, comedian, performer, currently appearing in Dumb Show at Rose Kingston.
Mm.
This is a play that's written by a writer called Joe Penhal. It has been on before. I believe it was on at the Royal Court some years ago.
That's right.
And you play the role of Barry.
Yes.
Tell me a bit more about Barry.
Barry's a kind of, he's a popular Saturday night mainstream entertainer who's probably, you know, his career is kind of plateaued a little bit. He doesn't feel that he's enjoyed the trappings of success as he's seen other people enjoy them, or that he would want to. You know, the material stuff, he hasn't gained that as much as he'd like to. So this play basically is about two journalists from a tabloid, an unnamed tabloid, that set about to kind of expose him. And so the play really becomes the issues of, kind of the age-old issue really about privacy versus public interest, with the journalist saying, well, it's in the public interest to expose this guy who is a bit of a drunk and he takes drugs and fools around with women, so to expose him for all those things. And his argument is that that's got nothing to do with my work and my life, and that's separate and private. So it does that hopefully in a kind of entertaining way.
And of course, so what's interesting about Barry here is that there is some allusion to the fact that he may be of Asian heritage.
Mm.
There's a couple of times when you talk about your mother
coming from the East.
Yes.
Yeah. That was Joe's idea, really. I mean, Joe kind of just said, in order to make it fit better, he kind of asked me what degree of Asianness I was happy to bring to it. And I said, look, you know, a slight one is fine. But I said, I don't want to gild the lily here and kind of have, you know, be wearing a, you know, salwar or something like that, which was discussed at one point. They said, would you be wearing an Indian suit? And I said, no way. Because I think all of that would be distracting, because it's not really about an Indian celebrity. It's just about a celebrity. And I thought that if it's over Indianified, then that sways it.
But that means the writer was involved in the rehearsal process and he sort of added lines to fit the authenticity of the actor playing
that's right.
the role.
Yeah, yeah. He was very present. I mean, it's one of the things, it's rare actually. I mean, it's rare for me certainly to have a writer that is available during the rehearsal process, because it's great. It means you can ask the intention of the word on the page rather than merely trying to interpret it. The interpretation is fine, and that's part of what theatre's all about. But for some parts of the play, we were able to say to him, why did you say that? Why is this character saying that? Is this not contradictory? Does this not mean this? And he was able to give us an explanation, and that was really, really useful.
Right. So, in terms of, you know, Sanjeev Bhaskar playing Barry, I just want to explore this bit about the authenticity of the actor's two characters a little further, because, I mean, as a member of the audience, I found it really helpful that you alluded to your heritage in some way that seemed natural in the context of the story without, as you say, gilding the lily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, recently you were in Spamalot as King Arthur, and of course that's a different kind of play. It's a bit more farcical, you know, set in a kind of distant past type stuff. It's non-realistic in comparison to Dumb Show. But again, there were moments in the Spamalot piece where, for the sake of the audiences, maybe there was some familiarization of, like, Sanjeev Bhaskar, the comedian, coming into it. I want to ask you that, is that something that you yourself feel happier about doing, or is it something that the writer writes in because they think, oh, you're a familiar name to other people as a comedian?
I think, well, on of the three occasions that I've done, you know, theatre work, you mentioned, you know, the Dumb Show and Spamalot as being places where there was a kind of nod to my background. Art, which I did first, there wasn't at all. Actually, there was slightly, very slightly in that, because I referenced a relative with a slight accent in that. It's not something that I'm either for or against. I think if it's kind of appropriate to the tone of the piece, then I think I'm quite happy to do it. You know, I'm very proud of my heritage, and so I'm not one of those people who kind of says that I should play someone who's not Asian or of Asian background I think that I have a counter argument, which is that, you know, I like any other actor, should be able to play characters from a non-Asian background. But I certainly don't have a problem with being Asian. And I think that if it's appropriate, I think that's it's fine to make that nod. I'm not sure whether I'd necessarily do it if I was cast in a Dickens or in a Rodgers and Hammerstein or something like that, which is very time specific. With both art and with the Dumb Show, they're quite contemporarily set plays. Whereas Spamalot was just, you know, they had references from everywhere and nowhere at the same time. So it was a little easier to play with that there. Although with Spamalot, I thought, as I do with Dumb Show, which is that I think that if people are thinking about my ethnicity when they leave, then I just haven't done my job. You know, it's fine to have those nods, but the audience should see those as character traits or something that illuminates the character rather than gives them a defined ethnic character or characteristic, which I think would be wrong if they kind of, in Spamalot, if people had left thinking, oh, that Indian guy playing that Indian King Arthur, then I don't think I've done my job properly.
Well, I don't think audiences do think like that, but, you know, we can't get away. So there are some elements of, we know Sanjeev Bhaskar, the comedian, say for something like Spamalot. Mm-hmm. But to come back to Dumb Show, I mean, you know, when I saw you on stage initially, and this is not a piece that I was familiar with until I saw it here at the Rose, you know, I just thought, oh, it's like a Engelbert Humperdinck type of an entertainer, you know, those kind of entertainers from the 70s or a Cliff Richard type entertainer, no aspersions on their character or anything like that.
Sure.
But, of course, later on I learned that when the play was first put on at the Royal Court, the news about Michael Barrymore and his personal problems were very much in the kind of news media.
Right.
So for people who were a bit more learned than myself, they equated to that sort of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas I was just thinking of your like archetype, you know, 70s, 80s, Saturday night entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope I've answered your question, because I didn't think of you as like, oh, he's the Indian entertainer or something like that.
Yes.
But I do think of you when I see you, and I do notice if it's a realistic piece and a character is of a different hue than, say, the other characters on stage, then I personally, as a member of an audience, feel I would like to just know a little bit about their backstory, but I'd like it to occur naturally.
I totally agree with you. I mean, it's like seeing somebody do or hearing somebody do an accent that they just can't do. And if they're trying to convince you that they are kind of American or something, or they're from the Deep South, and they've got an appalling accent that just sounds like, you know, Coventry or something, it's off-putting, because there's a constant reminder that they're not from, you know, the southern states of America or wherever it may be. I mean, my biggest gripe with white characters or English characters playing Indians or Asians on screen has really been that, which I didn't object to Peter Sellers playing an Indian character, and I certainly didn't expect to take exception to Michael Bates in It Ain't Half Hot Mum, because he could speak Urdu. I mean, he could speak the language. Mm. So I didn't find those such an issue personally, because whoever they were in real life, they were kind of subsumed within a character that I could realistically believe in whatever context I was given. So I think it's in that sense. I think, you know, that's where I get annoyed sometimes is. Well, frustrated as an audience member is that, you know, sometimes you can just try too hard, and it's just not appropriate for that particular thing. So I suppose that's always my thing with any of the characters, particularly on stage, is that, absolutely happy to make a nod to any kind of background that makes the character feel more authentic, make them feel like they should be on that stage. In that setting, and anything beyond that, is uncomfortable. Sometimes it takes time to find it. Sometimes I think with Spamalot, I think in the first week I did too much. There was a couple of references in there, too many.
I mean, I remember you even burst into a bit of Hindi somewhere in the story.
I did, yeah. That was. I mean, that was interesting, that, because it was. I did that. There was a couple of times when I did that, and it seemed to be, I remember when Eric Idle came to see it, you know, I was slightly worried about the fact that I'd gone off the script, because obviously, as you'd imagine, there's no Hindi in the script. But he absolutely approved of it, and he approved of it not necessarily because it was funny, but because he said it's in the spirit. It's in the spirit of the whole Python thing. It's there to kind of, you know, undermine and satirize and everything else. But, it, you know, certainly initially in Spamalot, the first week I was there, I definitely did too much because that was about my own nervousness and my own kind of phobias and fears and everything and driving that. And once I was a little more confident with the piece and what I was doing there, I was able to strip those away and just have the ones which I thought were appropriate or fun, you know.
Okay, and you were able to carry along with that?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you're such a well-known personality as a, as I said, as a writer, as a broadcaster, as well as a performer and a comedian. I mean, did you have to audition for any of these roles, or do people sort of say, oh, we'd really like to have Sanjeev Bhaskar do it, and they can just cast you in it?
Well, you know, I have a kind of recurring dream where I'm just offered a role, and then I wake up and it's a dream. It's it very, very rarely happens. I
really?
Mean, yeah, I auditioned for Spamalot, and I'm glad I did. Actually, I mean, I quite like auditioning. It's very flattering to be offered something straight. In fact, Dumb Show was an offer.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'd auditioned for something else at the Rose Theatre, so the casting director had met me,
right?
And so this was in their mind. So. But it's, yeah, I don't mind auditioning. It's a chance, you know, I don't know if I can do it. And sometimes it's a chance to say the words out loud. It's a chance to meet the director and you know, get an idea of the kind of people you're going to be working with. And that's kind of useful, because if they don't like you and you don't like them, then it should end there. And also, I think just that, I don't expect to just be given jobs. I think, you know, it is a dream and it'd be lovely if that happened, but it's very, very rare. I mean, except for the times when I've written something where miraculously a character very much suited to me appears in the script.
But I'm hoping you wrote that in deliberately.
It's always slightly. Well, it's complete. It's fate. It's fate. Yeah, it's kind of complete destiny. I had nothing to do with it. I actually don't mind auditioning. I think it's quite important. It's good for me, I think.
Okay, very good. And, of course, apart from the stage, we are just about to see you in Gurinder Chadha's new film, It's a Wonderful Afterlife, as a curry man, your character's called.
Yes. Yes. We fight for a proper name, but I've got curry man.
Really? But you have a lot of screen time, as they say.
Yes. Yeah, kind of. I'm on pretty much at the beginning of the film, I think.
And meander through it, indeed.
Yes.
So, you just told me that you were going to go to the premiere of that. Do they have an understudy for you in the Dumb Show, or what will happen?
No. I'm just going for the photographs at the beginning, and then they're putting me on a motorbike, on the back of a motorbike.
Are you serious?
I'm being couriered here. Yeah, I'm going to be couriered back here for the half, so I can get on.
So no understudies for you.
No understudies for me. No.
Well, we were also just talking earlier that. There is an exhibition that's just opened at the Royal Festival Hall called The South Hall Story. And I was, of course, very delighted to read your name amongst the kind of early pioneers in West London who began performing on stage at the Watermans. And I just wanted you to tell Theatre Voice listeners a little bit about how you began as an artist, really.
In as short a way as I can, I kind of I didn't do any drama at school at all, and then I got to my late 20s. I worked in marketing, did a marketing degree, worked in marketing for about 6-7 years or so, and then the last marketing job I had, I was forced to take the company to court, and so I had to sue them for breach of contract. They countersued, and so this was dragged on through the courts for about 2 years.
Mm.
During which time I couldn't get any kind of job at all because all my references were tied up in this court case. So during that time, I went to see a play at the National. It was played by Tara Art, and somebody pointed out Jitendra Verma, the director, in the interval. At the end of the play, and I went up to him and I said, "Did you direct this?" And he said, "Yes." He said, "Did you enjoy it?" I said, "Well, most of it." He said, "What didn't you enjoy?" And I said, "Well, I said, that scene didn't make any sense." And I said, "Well, you know, what did you do that for?" I said, "If you cut those two scenes together and snip that bit out," I said, "it'll just make it more pacier."
Gosh, which play was that?
Do you know, I can't remember now. I can't remember whether it was... I don't think it was Little Clay Cart. I think Tartuffe. It might have been Tartuffe, yeah.
Or was it Cyrano with the Nasiruddin Shah character for me?
No, it was definitely not that one. Okay, so I think it was Tartuffe, yeah. And I said, that just, you know, you just lost that exposition you don't need there. So, you know, rather generously, he didn't tell me to get out and throw me out of the building. But he said, why don't you, he said, do you do drama? And I said, no, but I'm interested. And he said, well, why don't you come and look at one of our workshops? So I kind of took 2-3 buses down to their
from West London to
Southwest London. Doesn't make it sound that far, actually. Why did I take the buses? I should have just got a train. And basically, some people hadn't turned up. There were about 10 or 12 observers watching this workshop. And he just said, look, would anyone mind making up numbers? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll join in. And at the end of that, I was basically, through a quirk of fate, because one guy dropped out to go and be in Emmerdale. And they said to me, do you want to do a schools tour, TIE tour of kind of...
You mean you got offered a job on the spot without having any drama experience?
Yeah, right. Just that kind of workshop. And so I kind of did that. I did the schools thing for a bit. And I'd been at college with Nitin Sawhney, the composer, musician. And we'd done a double act at college. And we would rehearse for 2 weeks and do one show. And that was it for the year. Because it was just for our enjoyment, really.
That's the Secret Agents, isn't
that
it?
That was the Secret Agents, yeah. And so years later, after we'd left college, around this period, Nitin and I got together and he said, you know, there's still nobody out there doing what we were doing. It's a mix of music and comedy. And his musical abilities are phenomenal. So it just meant that we could surprise the audience by him suddenly playing flamenco or me singing in Italian or something like that. And we did that, and a couple of producers turned up at one of the shows. We were reviewed by Bonnie Greer in Time Out and got a rave review, and sold out the Oval House Theatre in South London, which was kind of, we were in the studio space, it was quite easy to sell out, really. And two producers came and saw the show and appeared backstage and said, we're thinking of doing a sketch show and this is the kind of material we're looking for. Would you be interested? Within kind of a few months of that, the court case, they'd settled out of court. And I just then had to make a decision. But the sketch show became Goodness Gracious Me. So it just all went from there. Life-changing moment.
But you were doing some television presenting before the Goodness Gracious Me sketch show, were you? Like on Network East?
Yeah, well, at the time we were doing the radio show. Right. I did, Network East. And again, that was...
And Bollywood or Bust, if I remember.
I did one series of Bollywood or Bust, the game show, yes. Much lamented. It was good, actually. I mean, they should bring that up. They should bring that back.
Yeah.
But there's more interest in Bollywood now than there was sort of like, 12, 15 years ago. And there's more of a kind of mainstream audience for it. But nevertheless...
It's time to talk to the BBC.
I think it may be. So, yeah, so it was... Yeah, the presenting thing was, it took up a day a week. So it was 10 days, and that was it.
Oh, I see, okay. But there was also some talk that you used to come to Waterman's to do the comedy stuff. Is that correct? One Nation Under a Group.
Yeah, what happened was that...
Is that all around the same time, then?
It kind of is, yeah. My last marketing job was at a small place called the Tom Allen Art Centre in... Stratford in East London.
Yeah.
And I was a marketing development officer there. And I put together an Asian comedy night there because I knew that Nitin and I would be there. I knew that Parv Bansal and people who were connected with Hounslow would be there. So I managed to get about an hour and a half's worth of, maybe an hour's worth of entertainment on, and it was a tiny little place, and I think Gurinder Chadha came to that as well, I vaguely remember, but I put that on, and then Hardial Rai, who was running the Asian setup at Waterman's, said to me, why don't we do the same thing here in West London? And I said, well, that's great, we can have the same acts then, we cover East and West London. And we did two regular ones at Stratford. And then One Nation Under a Groove, which became the Waterman's Comedy Night, started about a month or two later. So we alternated for about, only for about 3 months, and then the Tom Allen Centre got closed down.
Yes.
And so then Waterman's was the only place that it happened after that. So it happened at the Tom Allen first, and then in talking to Hadley Arle, it made sense to do it in West London as well. I mean, the West London one was better. There was just a bigger audience, and you know, particularly
it was more regular as well.
It was. It was monthly, which was tough on coming up with new material, but just that because you had Southall at the doorstep, they were just much more used to going out than East London, which didn't have they didn't have a kind of a going out sort of Asian audience.
But I also think the Tom Allen Centre was on this like one-way street opposite the Theatre Royal Stratford
East.
Oh my
East, goodness!
You know,
someone,
in
it was
comparison
like,
to
yeah, New Waterman's was great. You know,
the practicalities of getting there is what I mean.
Oh, the Tom Allen Centre was like it was in the middle of a kind of it may as well have been in the middle of a prison complex or something. It was just surrounded. It was horrible,
yes,
horrible place.
I have visited it on numerous occasions, I must say.
It was frightening walking into work. I'm glad, you know, that it picked up at the Waterman's because, I mean, apart from helping me or helping certainly me and Nitin to kind of hone the material and gain confidence, it just meant that there was... As a punter, you know, as an audience member, I would have been really happy for something like that. As an agent, I would have been happy for something like that to be going on. Because, you know, with the theatre stuff at the time, I mean, really, Tara Arts and Tamasha were the only two kind of Asian theatre companies that were doing anything. And that was great. But, you know, plays are difficult to put together and they'd come around once a year. Whereas something as immediate as comedy and as accessible as comedy, I thought it was great to be able to kind of pitch that to a British Asian audience. The turnaround was just very quick and it really plugged a gap.
But do you feel that it's easier now for young performers who might be starting out on their craft to either be a comedian or to be an actor in theatre than it might have been, you know, 15, 20, 10 years ago, because of the fact that you've had to carve out your own turf, whether it was creating a circuit,
yeah,
whether it was creating the act, creating the circuit, creating the audience.
Yeah. I don't feel totally qualified to answer the question fully, to be quite honest, because, you know, I've had such a bizarre and incredibly fortunate route to be doing what I do, that experientially I can't compare it with anything else. I don't know anything else. I just got lucky. But I think that it's difficult. I think that, you know, there's less funding for theatre. Theatre still is the only place that risks are taken. I don't think risks are particularly taken on television or film. But I think that, you know, that people's options for entertainment have just kind of got a lot wider. You know, it used to be, you know, film, TV, theatre, and that's it. Now there's kind of, you know, with the internet and with gaming and all this kind of stuff, there's tons and tons of things you can do. And you don't have to go out. You can just do it from home now. Mm. So I think that, you know, that's a challenge to theatre, but also at the same time, I think that's where theatre suddenly kind of rises head and shoulders above everything else, because it's live. You know, it's real. It'll happen that night. When you're there, that is the only experience, that time, that experience will ever happen. Next night's another audience, different people. And I think that's great. But I think for Asian actors, or ethnic actors generally, I think across the board, I think it's probably marginally better. I don't think anyone would be surprised now at finding a kind of an Asian Juliet, for instance, in an RSE production or...
But that kind of happened in the 80s as well, I think. You know?
I think there are more Asian actors about, and there are more of those roles that can be filled. I mean, I would never have imagined an Asian King Arthur in the 80s. I just don't think it would have happened. I don't think West End theatre would have interested.
No, you're right about that. But I mean, in the kind of what you might call the rep or the funded theatre. I don't know what the right term is, but...
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think that has been extended to kind of the West End. I think there have been examples of that. I think post Bombay Dreams, Bombay Dreams was kind of a financial success at least, and it brought Asians into the theatre. But a lot of the people who were in Bombay Dreams, a lot of the Asian actors, have gone on to do kind of various leads in various things in the West End. And I think that's kind of good. At the same time, the strength of Asian theatre was always its unique voice and the plays that it produced. And, I'm not sure whether there's as much funding. I don't know if it's, if around the country, you need that kind of access around the country as well. I don't think community theatre is as strong simply because the money isn't there. Mm. So that becomes, at the Tom Allen Centre, I was running a weekend Asian actors workshop, really just for the kids to kind of, who just wanted to express themselves, so they could just come in and express themselves. They'd put on a production, wouldn't be a serious thing, none of them, two went on to become actors.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 18, it was just different for them. They were out of the family, they were out of the shop, they were out of whatever environment they were in. The funding for that kind of thing just isn't there, and that's a real shame because, of those 18 or 20 people, two did go on to, they found the passion and they went on.
Are you allowed to name names of those two?
I can't remember them.
Oh, okay. Never mind, two.
They obviously weren't that famous. But yeah, there were two that did, that I know that moved on from that. In fact, one of them, whose name I can remember, Mob Dar, became a senior producer at the BBC. That was from just coming into those workshops. And that kind of route, it's not a traditional Asian thing to go to drama schools and study stagecraft and all the rest of it. And it certainly wasn't in my generation, and I don't think it is yet. So those little outlets of community theatre and community-based kind of theatre access, I think is vital, if only to give people an expressive voice.
Well, it's interesting that the lead in Gurinder Chadha's new film, It's a Wonderful Afterlife, that we've just talked about, is Goldie Note,
who
was... in theatre, she was in a Kali theatre show.
Mm.
And actually, even Bendy Like Beckham, Paminda Nagra, used to be on stage. So
that's right.
But
yeah.
You're right. That means that the theatre is the place where all these risks are taken or stars are created or people hone their craft and then
get opportunities. I think even enough to know that you're passionate enough to have a go, because you don't get access to it. If you're in the middle of a kind of fairly traditional, Asian area, if you're living in it, you just don't have that access because that's not encouraged, and not for any kind of evil nefarious reasons. It's just, culturally, the migrant thing is that you get your head down and you work and you fit in somehow. You don't do something which is going to, where rejection is inevitable. And that's the whole point, was to come here for, my parents and their generation, was to come here and actually kind of succeed. It wasn't come here and be rejected. And they had enough of that rejection. They didn't want their kids to go through it. So, but having that other access, particularly at community level, and it doesn't matter that they don't want to be actors. That's not the point. The point is that they get to express themselves creatively. And also they become part of, the theatre experience. They go to the theatre a lot more themselves. And all of that stuff has got to be good. It's got to be good for society.
Do you find you get a lot of fans of yours coming to the Rose Kingston to see you?
There's been a few people at the stage door, but they're the people that you see at every stage door, unfortunately. So I don't think they're specifically here for me.
But I think it's quite nice to have
fans. It's very sweet. That's nice. Yeah, it's sweet, yeah.
I've gone to, say, the Old Vic to see the producers when Kevin Spacey and... is it Jeff Goldblum was in it, and I've gone round to stage two and done my fan thing.
I would do that for them as well.
Well, I'd do it for you too. I've done it at Arthur. But what about yourself as a performer? Do you like theatre? Do you prefer film? Do you prefer writing?
To be quite honest, the span of my career really has been about 13 years. So it's not been... incredibly long. It's a fairly young career. But if I look at the variety that I've done within that, then I'm astounded. You hope to get work, you just hope to be in work, and then you hope that it's interesting work. But if I look at, that across, from the sketch show to sitcoms or to musical to theatre to movies to documentaries to, writing a book and all this kind of stuff, having a number one in the pop charts with Gareth Gates for comic relief, and extraordinary stuff like that. The variety of it, I'm stunned by it. I'm absolutely so blessed.
But do you feel that we also have an immigrant mentality that you just said, you know, you hope to be in work. They're always thinking, I must be working. And
yeah,
if you're
I
not
think
working,
so.
We panic.
I think so. But, you know, I think that's also about, it's become a generational thing as well. You know, my kids, I don't think they would necessarily have that. You know, I was born in England, but I, you know, it's very, very vivid to me, the struggles of my parents and their generation, that they didn't fit in. And despite not fitting in and being rejected and having all the kind of racist stuff, that they survived. And so, yeah, my kind of, I've got, you know, perhaps a slightly diluted work ethic. And immigrant work ethic, but nevertheless, it's pretty strong. Whereas I don't think my kids would.
Your kids are quite young, right?
Yeah, well, I have a stepdaughter who's 17 and a son who's 4. But you know, they are born into a certain degree of comfort that I wasn't born into, and I want them to be comfortable. I don't want them to be uncomfortable at all. But at the same time, it's something I ask, you know, friends of mine who are way more successful than me. I kind of ask about. I said, How do you explain to your kids the kind of, how do you keep them grounded? How do you tell them about the value of a pound? You know, and it's something that, you know, comes with trying to be a parent. But the reason I don't have it is because I saw my parents struggle in all sorts of ways, not just financially, but, you know, socially as well. It's never been tough for me, not in relation to them at all. So there is that kind of element to it. Yeah, I do have that work ethic thing, but I think it's partly because it's a generational thing as well as an ethnic sort of immigrant thing.
So Sanjeev Bhaskar, we're sitting here in your dressing room at the Rose Kingston, talking to you for Theatre Voice. I know you've got another show to do in about an hour or so.
Ah, yes, God bless Lord Matinee, or whoever invented the matinee.
But after the show's been on at Kingston, will it be touring at all?
Do you know, I don't know. It was, when I came into it, there was no mention of it touring or transferring to another theatre or anything like that. It was a very limited kind of period of involvement. And to be quite honest, I read the play. I kind of heard, you know, who else was involved, Dexter Fletcher and Emma Cunniff. And I thought, yeah, this has got to be good. It's out of my comfort zone slightly. You know, it's not a Mr. Nice Guy entirely happy, funny person.
But that must be challenging as an actor then, as a performer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. To be quite honest, I don't approach it any differently to the drama, to any differently to the way I approach comedy. In fact, I've never called myself a comedian. I don't think I am. I can't tell jokes. But I can write comedy, and I've got an understanding of how comedy works, I think. But it was just something that, yeah, constantly new challenges. I work harder if I'm out of my comfort zone. You know, I know I can get lazy, and it's something that.
But
I
do
have
you
to
think
guard.
Because your own persona, you know, as a comedian, as a writer, because you've done such a range of things, you're so well known that for you to play something like Barry, who is a slight, he's quite a nice guy, but he's very flawed. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, deeply flawed. Yeah.
Does that upset your fans, or would it upset you if they were upset? You know, I'm thinking a la, like, Bollywood actors. You know what I mean? Once, if you acquire a certain following, which you have.
My goodness, so once you're a hero, if you play a villain, everybody just kind of leaves the cinema in droves.
Well, does that trouble you as an actor when you
No,
think
not
that...
at all. Not at all. I mean, I think that it was interesting. A friend of mine, a really good friend of mine who came to see this, who I went to college with, I asked him what he thought, and he said it was kind of unsettling, because he said, I know you so well. I mean, we've been friends for 25 years. And he said, but to see this other side of you was kind of just a bit unsettling. He said, I kind of had to remind myself that, you know you're Sanjeev, and we've known each other for years, and all this sort of stuff. Which, you know, I twisted into a compliment, because I thought, well, good, then hopefully I'm being convincing then. I do think, you know, acting is about taking layers off, not putting layers on. And we all have the ability to be, you know, deeply unpleasant and horrible to our fellow human beings. And it's trying to uncover that bit of yourself, which is kind of uncomfortable because you don't want to really go there. That is kind of fun as well. You know, it's a chance to kind of discover that about yourself and kind of go, yeah, okay, that exists. I can now shut the door on it, but it's there. And in that sense, yeah, I'm kind of aware that there may be a preconception of me and that people may be surprised or maybe shocked. You know, this character boozes a lot and takes drugs and all the rest of it. Doesn't really have any great moral standing. Hopefully, you know, at the point that I bow, maybe people can see who I really am. If they stay there that long, they've been offended and left and never watching him again on TV.
And well, the Dumb Show is on here until the 17th of April.
That's right.
It's on at the Rose Kingston. So what next for you? Will we see you in another piece of theatre very soon after that?
Yeah, I love it. I really love theatre. I mean, it's I've done precious little of it. And each time, you know, with Spamalot, I basically said to my agent, I said, I haven't done any theatre for 5 years or something. And I said, yeah, I'd really like to do something. And Spamalot turned up. And then after Spamalot, I said, I'd really like to do a bit more theatre. It'd be great to just do maybe something more dramatic. So, you know, fortunately, this has come up. So I'd love to do more, yeah. I think that just, you know, the chance to get it right, the chance to kind of feel the audience and to work with the audience to create an evening. You don't get that in anything else.
Okay. Sanjeev Bhaskar, thank you very much for talking to Theatre Voice.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Pleasure.